session number 13573, Reel 2.
To continue then.
What
happened next?
And I discovered at that point that all ranks in the German forces saluted each other, which is, doesn't happen in the British Armed Forces, of course. And if I'd have waved, I suppose, something like a salute, they would have carried straight up. Possibly, I don't know. So what difference that would have made, I don't know. But they decided they were going to take me in, obviously, and the first place they took me to was what I would call a small local pub. And they sat me in a sort of bar room in there, and the landlord, I assume, came and stood in the bar with a bottle in his hand on guard. The troops disappeared, and various young children from the locality came peering through round the door, and as soon as I looked at them, they shut off in alarm. So I suppose I looked a bit messy and beardy, and their propaganda must have been terrible. They must have thought I was some sort of horrible murderer. I suppose I was, I don't know. But it seemed to me that it looked as if they'd left me to my own devices. So I thought, well, I could shoot off now. But I found later one of them was on guard outside, so if I had have tried it, I may not have survived that. But they contacted the local police. Now, the police picked me up, and they took me to a civilian prison camp of some sort. The inmates, one of them was Jewish, I know, because he acted as an interpreter for me, in black and yellow stripes. Camp guards walking about with leather straps in their hands.
Was this a concentration camp or not a severe?
The inmates were pushing carts about, generally working. I think it was probably a civilian prison camp. I don't think it was probably not as severe as the death camps, the concentration camps, but it was enough to worry me a little bit, and I wondered where I'd landed up. But the treatment, they took me into the commandant's office. The commandant and his fellow officers all stood about, and they brought this Jewish man in to act as an interpreter. Wanted to know my name and all the rest of it. So I gave them the prescribed formula, name, rank and number. What's your name? I said, it's Albert Jones. Albert what? I said, Jones. And they couldn't seem to get around that for some reason, so they said, write it down. So I wrote it down, and I put Albert Jones. Yanez! So I don't know if that's the way they pronounce it over there normally, is it?
Probably with a Y.
Yeah.
It's a Johann,
don't it? Yeah. So, anyway, it was just chit-chat, and they gave me a cigar and sat me by a stove, which kept me very warm, and
Had you had something to eat by then?
No. I began to feel a bit more comfortable. And then A couple of officers from the Luftwaffe came along in a car, and they were taking me off. But before I went, I had to pose outside the camp gates with the resident officers, one on either side of me, having their photograph taken until enough of them had been photographed with me to send home to the families, I suppose, how they captured this Terrorflieger. And I went off with the Luftwaffe to a flak battery nearby, and they claimed to have shut us down. And there we were fed, stayed overnight, and fed there. Pardon me. And we stayed overnight. Next morning went by rail to Frankfurt on Main, which turned out to be an interrogation centre.
Had any of your fellow crew members been picked up?
They were all, we were all together in this Luftwaffe battery place, the flak battery. That's where we met up. So this was later in the afternoon. One of them had landed in a pile of manure, farmer's heap of... But he wasn't very popular. We didn't stand very close to him. But another one had landed on the riverside and spotted some barges, and they caught him trying to sit up in a barge to Hamburg, I suppose. But otherwise, we all landed up together in this flak place, flak battery. And from there on, we travelled together all over Frankfurt. And from there, we went to Frankfurt on Main, the interrogation centre. They tried to get as much information out of it as they could, even posing as Red Cross people from Switzerland to see if you'd give them any more information. Peg! Can I have one of those sweets?
Anyhow, you were saying how you met up with your fellow crew members.
Oh yes, we all met up at the this flak battery and went on to Frankfurt. I can't recall how long we were there, a few days, maybe a week or so.
Was the interrogation very intimidating? I mean, when you only said your name, rank and number, did they try any sort of force to get any more information out of you?
No. No, they were... I must say, because these are... Well, I suppose they were intelligence people, I don't know, but... there was nothing like that. They had a nasty habit of... because we were confined all the time, except when they pulled you out to talk to you. Quite a lot of people in a smallish room, so I had a habit of closing everything up during the day and sticking the heat full on, and at night opening everything up and turning the heat off. So during the day we were absolutely baking, at night we were freezing, so I don't know if that was any deliberate attempt to make us want to get out of there quickly. It was at that place, this particular wooden hut, it was a wooden barrack room, was about 3 yards from the single barbed wire fence. And people in there before us had dug a tunnel from the barrack, from the room, to beyond the fence. Of course, they'd done it very close to the surface, and some German officer walked around and fell in and broke his leg. which pleased everybody no end. That was the first escape attempt that I ever heard about. But from there we went to Stalagate B, which was a camp occupied by the British Army taken at Dunkirk. In fact, I think they'd built it themselves pretty well.
Was this near Frankfurt?
No, this was in Silesia somewhere. We went by cattle truck to this place, Lambsdorff, the local area. And we were put in a compound which was surrounded by other compounds. We were in a compound in the middle of a compound. And the troops were around the outside. Three sides were British Army troops and the fourth side was Russian prisoners of war. But as we walked through the gate into this camp, the British troops lined up and all shouting, "Where was the RAF at Dunkirk?" We got a hostile reception from our own people when we got there. But we were never allowed out of this central compound. And we had to exist on the rations that survived after the other people had a go at it. And it was a very severe winter in 1941. We're in barracks with no heating in, and the condensation from the people in the room just froze on the wall, so there was a layer about ice about 3 inches thick on the interior, on the inside walls of this place. And that really was a terrible place. We had very little food, nothing at all.
Did you still have your uniform clothing, your Irvine jackets, or how did you?
No, they had been taken away. We'd got them. In fact, the boots, flying boots, had been taken away, and I'd been given a pair of brown boots that looked as if they might have been Polish army officers' boots or something like that. I had my uniform, and I think I'd managed to get a greatcoat from an army greatcoat from somewhere. And a hat, which looked like a Polish forage cap, you know. But otherwise, I was in khaki and blue.
What was the sort of food you were given?
Ah, that was shocking food, that was. Pardon me. We had the ration, as I can recall, it was a... In the mornings, we had a pint of mint tea, which we used for shaving in if we wanted to shave, because it was hot. And then, at lunchtime, they issued three potatoes and a slice of black bread about an inch thick. And also a pint of Swede soup, usually Swede. Sometimes there was fish in it. But that was about the limit of it.
Anything in the evening?
No, that was the day's ration. That was,
so you didn't know anything until the following morning?
No. Except that, apart from the bread we'd save from lunchtime, which you sort of try to make it last out of it, you know. But we lost weight pretty fast. And that, in fact, to the one side, I was in the compound on the left-hand side, I was the cookhouse. So at night we used to get through the wire of our compound, through the wire of the cookhouse compound, and go and pinch the potatoes for them in there. That's how we supplemented our grub. And the guards patrolled with Alsatian dogs around our compound, in between the two lots of compounds, so we had to dodge those when we did it. But that's the only extra food we ever had while we were in Lambsdorff. Apart from once, they decided every now and again these people would do a search, turf everybody out of the barracks and search everything that was in the barracks to see if they could, I don't know what they thought we might have, but to discover anything we were not supposed to have. And one day they came in to do this job and they brought in two Alsatian dogs with them. When they all left the compound, there was only one Alsatian dog. And the next day we had meat in the stew, in the soup, for the first time we were there. It was quite nice too. It was the poor old dog. But you would literally eat anything when you were hungry. So that. But from that place we moved on to Stalaglof 3.
Before we leave this point, what washing facilities did you have?
Oh, there were sort of an ablution room at the end of the barracks, which was you got the water by operating hand pumps, and it was cold water. It came out of spray holes in a pipe, and there was a sort of a trough underneath. You could wash yourself or wash your clothes or whatever, as long as it was cold water, and as long as you got soap. But it was very sketchy, I'm afraid, hygiene in that place.
Did you suffer from lice or anything like that?
Oh, my goodness, yes. We, were crawling with them. In fact, all the camps you went to, you picked lice up. It was sort of inescapable for some reason. But,
can you tell me a bit about how you occupied your days in the camp?
I could tell you.
In Lambsdorff, in Stalagate B, during the winter, it was so cold that we were so weak, literally weak. I remember having to, we were in three-tier bunks, wooden bunks, I don't know if you've ever seen them, but, I was in the middle one. And a friend of mine, we just literally had to pick him up and put him, he couldn't climb into his bunk. And I should say, in that camp, most of the time, we were never undressed. We didn't undress to go to bed. Sometimes you took your boots off. And we all had one blanket each. That was the issue. and straw palliasses, or wood shavings rather, not straw. And you lay on these things and they became as hard as a plank after a few minutes because all the shavings flattened down. And I think, apart from getting up for the appel, being counted, you went straight back to bed again. You got up to eat, and you went straight back to bed again. You got up for an evening appel, went straight back to bed again. And I think that's how we carried on all through the... Well, the only times you had to make the effort to get up to eat, to get up to be counted, and to get up to go to the toilet, which was an experience in itself in that place. That was Stalagate B. That was terrible, that place. But we were there only 6 months there, and they moved us to Stalagate. This was run by the German army, by the way, Stalagate B. They moved us there to Stalagluft 3, which is run by the Luftwaffe. Now, that was completely different. It was like moving off the gutters into a luxurious hotel, by comparison. Not that it was that, but it was so much better. The people that ran the camp seemed to be more favourably disposed to us because they were simply the Luftwaffe, I think, and we were the Air Force, you know.
Fellow airmen,
yeah. The barracks were much better. They were all wooden, but they were much better. We seemed able to keep warmer there.
Did they have stoves in the huts?
They had stoves in the huts, yes. We used to do a lot of our own cooking on them. And there we began to get Red Cross food parcels as well as the normal rations, so we were able to improve a bit there. In fact, we were able to rebuild a little bit there. And activity, there was bags of activity there. The Red Cross supplied musical instruments. All sorts of
sports equipment.
And it got all sorts of educational equipment too, and it began to be called the University of the prison camps, because there were all sorts of courses run there. I mean, if you imagine that there were RAF pilots and people that could come from civilian street and trained to be a pilot or a navigator in a matter of weeks. They were obviously well-educated people, you see. And there were school teachers, university dons, doctors, dentists, all the professions were all there in Sagan. And they ran all these courses. There was a journalist there, and he was taking shorthand courses, which I took for about 12 months there. And then sport, of course, that was well organised. We were organised into local football teams. I mean, people from the Birmingham area played for the Birmingham football team and Liverpool, and just as it might be in the Football League, you know. So we really did not enjoy it, but we did keep ourselves occupied, which is what the Germans wanted more than anything else, I suppose. If you're a happy prisoner, you're not too much trouble. But even so, people became very depressed, especially people that had letters from home from their girlfriends and their wives saying that they'd met a rich American or something like that, and they became very depressed, and they were one or two suicides and attempted suicides.
What, can you give me an example of the improved food, the sort of meals you have now?
It wasn't improved from the German point of view, except there was more of it. Potatoes, bread and soup, that was there. I think this applied to everybody throughout Germany. If you were Nix Arbeit, Nix Essen was the password, I think, and that's they used to. They really was like that. I didn't. But there, you see, we began to get things from home. The only things they could send us from home was a bit of clothing and cigarettes. And the cigarettes came through in their thousands. I mean, I was virtually a non-smoker before that, but how many were you sending, Peg? I think
we used to be able to get 200 players, the long ones, for 5 shillings and 9 pence.
Yeah, but how many had you used to send me? About 200 a month,
I used to send them. My father used to go to the wholesalers where he got his tobacco from with this huge great order. I used to send them every other week. And he had them from the family, all the family, the brothers and the wives. I don't know how many, but I can't remember offhand how many he used to get.
With all these cigarettes coming through, which were sent by everyone because there was nothing much else they could send, we bought extra food, eggs and what have you, from the guards, you know, because they liked an English cigarette for some reason. and various other things we bought from them too, and that improved our rations. And the Red Cross parcels came along, and they always had sugar, raisins, dried milk, and tins of Spam and all that sort of thing, so that we began to be comparatively reasonably well off, I suppose, compared with the previous camp. We were a lot better off. And we were treated very well indeed. Very well indeed. Some terrible tales came out of Germany from these concentration camps, but you wouldn't think it was the same country where they could do that one in one camp, and yet with us, I suppose they were sticking to the Geneva Convention, I don't know. We were quite well treated. No complaints at all.
You didn't have to work?
They wouldn't let us work because they knew we would escape. If I can revert back to Stalag 8B, because we were in this inside compound because we were not allowed to work. And one of the things that they used to do was to exchange identities with one of the soldiers. You see, the soldiers went out on working on farms and all sorts of places. So if you wanted to try and escape, it was a simple thing to do, to change identities with a soldier on a working party. He assumes your identity and becomes sergeant so-and-so in the RAF camp, and you become private who's it in his side and go off on his work party, and from there you hopefully escape.